All units, Irene. I say again, Irene.
The November issue of Exceptional Parent magazine has two themes: financial information and parenting more than one child with disabilities. Read all for free at www.epmagazine.com. Follow EP Magazine on Facebook, Exceptional Parent Mag, and on Instagram and X at EPMZine.
Monotony. It comes in all shapes and sizes. Dull, tedious, just plain boring. But what is this? A contender, perhaps? Something unboring by the looks of it. Jabs right at dull, an uppercut to tedium, something that keeps you on your toes, keeps your head on a swivel. A knockout punch to your old, boring workouts. Welcome to Fight Camp.
Am I under arrest?
You've assaulted an innocent man in front of his wife and baby girl. Do you remember any of that?
Does the defendant have any priors?
Resisting arrest, DUI, assault.
Hey, my client has been awarded a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star Medal for his combat service.
I'm ordering you to undergo a 60-day outpatient rehabilitation program. Good luck.
Nah, I'm not doing that. Do you know what the VA's put me through?
If you have a brain in your head, you're going to listen to me right now. Because the next time you try to provoke a lethal response from law enforcement, you might not have an angel sitting on your shoulder.
The courts think that you're going to fix me.
I hate to disappoint you, but I can't fix you. That's your job, not mine.
Did you know that your father got out?
He is a dangerous man, Calvin. Be careful.
We came back, and they spat on us at the airport. No homecoming parade, no celebrations.
You can't pretend like you have any idea what it's like to be in combat.
No, but what I do know is this field of work that I've dedicated my life to has helped a lot of people.
When you got back, something was different. It wasn't that you'd changed. You'd been replaced.
You lose your morality when you go to war. And the hard part is coming back to a civilian society that doesn't have any idea what's going on in your head.
It's hard to believe my enemy is the man I used to be.
I bet you wonder, where's my tribe? And I ain't talking about no friendship neither. I'm talking about brotherhood.
What is it that you truly want, Calvin?
I just want to wake up in the morning and feel something.
My pain is relative, son. Sometimes we gotta fall apart to find ourselves all over again.
You were willing to give your life for your country. Now maybe you can try living for it.
What are you feeding this guy? Look at us.
What do you want? I did four tours.
Of the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh! Okay. Little spicy.
Movie, music, news, television promos, trailers, and videos used by Oscar Mike Radio are protected by the Fair Use Act. Section 107 of the Copyright Act. 1. The purpose and character of the use, including whether such use is of commercial nature or is for non-profit educational purposes. 2. The nature of the copyrighted work. 3. The amount and substantiality of the portion used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole. 4. The effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work.
I joined the military to be a part of something bigger, and solving complex problems was part of the job. But when it came to my mental health, I had no clue where to start.
Thankfully, you didn't need to figure it out alone.
If the veteran in your life
wife is having a hard time, you can be the one to offer help.
VA has resources like family education about mental health challenges, couples therapy, and parenting courses, so you can help your veteran build a brighter future.
Learn more about resources available at mentalhealth.va.gov/families.
Hello and welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio is co-produced with Sinister One Productions. What's your podcast doing? I want to thank my sponsors, Joyce Asek of Asek Real Estate, Echo 6 Creations, thank you Danielle, and my supporters, Kason Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp, be your strongest combination. Things are moving as we go into year 10 of Oscar Mike Radio, and I love all the types of guests I've gotten to talk to. But one class of guests that I'm really welcoming more and more is the non-military person, the person who has not served in the military, is not a veteran, is not active duty, not retired, but has decided for some reason, some way, that they're going to do something with what they have to serve veterans, serve Americans for the country they love. And my next guest embodies that. I want to welcome actor, producer, director, Stephen Graham to Oscar Mike Radio. It's an interesting story. Stephen, welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Travis. Appreciate you.
So I don't get to talk to movie types that much. I'm trying to change that in a good way, but this is not just, you know, a talk with you. This is about your new movie, Sheepdog, and what that represents for veterans and filmmaking and how Hollywood interacts with veterans. Sometimes I look at the screen, Steve, and I'm like, oh, that's just wrong. What were they thinking? But you've created something here that's coming out that really encapsulates a part of the veteran experience. So before we get into all that good stuff, and it's all good, I would like a little background of who you are, because it's a very interesting story of your family coming into this country and why you're here now, please.
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks for having me. So, you know, my journey sort of began, especially if I look at, or really look back on how I ended up here and how I ended up telling the stories, you know, of our men and women in uniform in Sheepdog. You know, from a very young age, you know, I grew up with my grandfather's stories. He was a Polish farmer who was a POW during the Second World War. And he was held captive for 5 years. And I grew up to his stories at night. You know, he was widowed and he moved in with us at quite a young age for me. And I would sleep on the top bunk and he would sleep on the bottom. And I would go to bed at night to his stories. And his stories of survival and resilience and struggle. And, you know, I remember him describing the liberation, you know, and what that was like for him with American forces literally coming over the horizon. And I think at a young age, that's just sort of like becomes woven into the fabric of who you are, right? So, you know, years later, you know, and I got into acting and I really was sort of dabbling more with like filmmaking, and I was doing like short films, and I ended up doing my very first short film was shot on black and white, Super 16. And it was retelling his story escaping from the labor camp, that was a Nazi occupied labor camp. And it was just like a 22 minute film. I put all the money up for it. I hired local crew at the time. I shot it on a pre-World War II farm, you know, so it was authentic. And it turned into this beautiful piece that I was really proud of. And sort of like my acting career sort of, you know, took me in a different direction. I was very lucky to have early success and so on. But I always wanted to get back to filmmaking, to being a storyteller. So in 2011, my car broke down 3 hours north of Los Angeles. And, you know, and the interesting part when you look at fate, you know, or how the universe works, like it was a newer car, so it should never have overheated. But something put me in this orchard where I pushed the car off the side of the road. I call a local tow truck company. Guy comes and picks me up, and he's like, you know, We got a 3-hour drive into the city, get comfortable, you know, let's go. And during that drive, he began to open up about, you know, the challenges he was facing, you know, in his marriage, being a father of three, financial hardship. And then he began to open up about the medications that he was on for his post-traumatic stress. And then he began to open up about his deployments. And I was quiet during the drive, and I just listened. And throughout that conversation, he kept saying, you know, I can't believe I'm telling you this. I haven't even told my wife this. I've never told a therapist this. And by the time I got back to LA, you know, I thanked him for getting me home safe. And I hugged him, and, you know, if you ever want to go for a beer, you ever need anybody, I'm here, brother, that, you know. And I was pretty sure, and I looked into his eyes, like he had no interest in seeing me again. And I didn't take that personal.
Right.
Because I think what I understood was that it was easier for him to share his story with somebody who was never going to judge him, that he was easier to just let it be a cathartic experience. And that was it. That week, I couldn't stop thinking about him, and I began to journal about it. And that was the seminal moment that sort of lit the spark. And as I've said, it wasn't just a sense of curiosity, Travis, it was a sense of responsibility. And that summer of 2011, I went out on a nationwide road trip and met with veterans, their families, active duty service members, mental health workers, Gold Star families, anybody who would talk to me to inform which is what became the screenplay for Sheepdog.
Take me back to, you said sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
Where did that sense of responsibility come from?
On its most basic and human level, empathy.
Yeah.
You know, this was a man that was like not broken. And as I've said before, there's fragments, but not broken. And I thought to myself, how could a guy who served his country honorably, who had been to hell and back on his deployments, who was working his butt off, you know, as a tow truck driver, tell me, you know, the shifts, like, you know, graveyard shifts, all hours to provide for his family. Then to be on a myriad of medications that he felt imbalanced, and he just never quite felt himself. And he was trying to work his frustration of working through, well, what's the right mixture of this and that, and feeling isolated. You know, when he picked me up, he was from a small town, 3 hours north of the city, you know, being disconnected from his brothers that he served with that were now across the country. And so that sense of responsibility was just, you know, going back to my childhood and my grandfather's stories was like, you know, these are the real heroes. And I don't throw that word around lightly. I was like, how could somebody who's been through this and survived it, and he's doing everything he can to be a good man and be the best he can for his family, and yet feel so alone in his experience? And I just felt like that's just not okay. That's not right. And what could I do? You know? And I have to say, Travis, like in the beginning, you know, that call to action, that sense of responsibility, I would be remiss to say, like, I was so idealistic. I had no training in psychology or to even know what I was about to go and embark upon and endure on that first road trip. And there was a moment. So the first veteran that I spoke with in McAllen, Texas, I remember putting a camera on him and interviewing him and you know, and being that guy who's going to change the world and we got to get the story and going to help and, you know. And we had a nice conversation. We shut the camera off and we broke for lunch. And during that time when the camera was off, he was like, so you're writing a screenplay. You're the writer. Like, you're writing. And I said, well, I don't know what's going to be that yet, but I just want to get the story. I want to understand what you guys are going through and how can I help? And he opened up to me about a military operation that his unit was a part of. And it blew my hair back. Like it floored me. And he took off his in memoriam band at the end of this experience with him, and he handed it to me, and he was like, "Don't let me down." And I remember not wanting to take it. The three names of those men on there that I carry with me everywhere I go to this day. And he's like, "Don't let me down." And from that moment on, I had the privilege and honor to meet with the men and the Gold Star families that were involved in that military operation where three service members were KIA during a military operation. But in that moment, that day in McAllen, Texas, I had to make a decision of, have I bit off more than I can chew? Am I prepared to do something like this? This is, go back to home in Los Angeles or continue on with all the folks I was going to meet with. And I continued on. And I was very, very fortunate that folks were willing to trust me with their stories.
As you talk to these individuals, veterans, and people around them, how did you start changing as a person the more you got immersed in their struggle and them trying to achieve a normal life? What was happening to you during that time?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, when you go to a steel town in Pittsburgh and you spend a month with a veteran staying and it's like sister's attic to work with him and get and understand his experience and so on, you really see that it's an ordinary person that was put into an extraordinary situation. And I think as a civilian, that's just sort of how that can change you, where you're like, when we, just getting back to talking about like when we use the word hero, what that means, the courage that it takes to endure what many of these men and women have experienced that I sat in front of, that always floored me. That always that touched me in such a profound way that you wish everyone around you saw that and knew what you knew, that because you spent the time with the person to go, as the I had this experience in Pittsburgh, just to give you an idea. So I've been working with retired Army veteran Brad Link, who's one of my brothers to this day, and I'm so grateful for his courage to share a story with me. But I remember after 2 weeks, so during my research, I'd never have a beer with you. I was always working, and in respect for your story, I'm not your drinking buddy, but I want to be honor your service and sacrifice. After 2 weeks with Brad, I was like, you know what, brother, let's go for a beer. And we go out, have a beer, I go to the bathroom, and I come back, and there's just a handful of people standing there, and Brad's got a smile, and he's like, "Hey, they recognize you," and he names the movie. He's like, "You want to take a photo with them?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, well, take a photo." And I remember looking at Brad, and there was this sense of like pride, like I'm his buddy in the movie, these people that are local, whatever. And I'm looking at him like if they knew in the last 2 weeks what this guy had been through, I am chopped liver. They would see right through me of like, this is the real guy. This is the real deal right there. So those are the things that start to our perceptions of like, and I'm speaking from obviously a civilian standpoint, that those things, when you really see what regular folks go through to go into a foreign country, all the training, you're talking about in the middle of the night doing village sweeps and then come home and you're working at a Bahama Breeze and your responsibility is refilling iced teas. Like that juxtaposition. And trying to fully like wrap your head around that. So that's like one of the first sort of like most obvious things that. But I think that the bigger thing on a sort of grander scale of like when we're talking about Gold Star family members, we're talking about mental health workers, is that I started to see that the community really relies on itself as a whole, as a tight-knit community outside of the civilian community. And the civilian community doesn't really fully understand that, what that is. And I always wanted to, in my storytelling, is like, well, how do I bridge that gap without pointing a finger or wagging a finger, pandering, falling into, tropes and stuff that we see in movies that, like, as you say, when you watch them, you're like, nope, that ain't real. Nope. Because if you're able to tell something that's authentic and authentic to folks' experiences, you can reach them. That was always my goal with Sheepdog.
You spent a lot of time doing these kinds of things and making the research and, more importantly, building the relationships. When did the idea or the time come to say, you know what, I have enough to build the movie, the storyboard, and start putting together? Take me through that process, because a lot of times making that bridge can be challenging in and of itself, just in a normal movie, but you're trying to do this the right way. How did that all start coming together to build what we have now?
So I started out journaling, right? So I had stacks of journals and I would write people's stories. And I realized, as I said, you shut the camera off, that's when you get the story, right? So that became my process. And I didn't have like an outline. I didn't, because then you have an agenda of like, well, this will be cool. And oh, if I do that, I wasn't going to do that. I was like, the story should inform me of like what the story should be. So you start to meet with folks, and I'll give you an example. I did a lot of work at the Detroit VA Medical Center in downtown Detroit. And Dr. Tara Consolino, who's now one of my close friends, she was a trauma therapist in training when I met her in 2011. And God bless her, because she took a chance on me, even though in the beginning she didn't want to, and she will tell you that. But she opened my eyes to the whole process, and it started to become obvious that, hey, like this should be a character that represents the experience, but I have to be honest in my t storytelling that the VA, there are issues here, but there are also extremely passionate folks that are coming to work every day, not getting rich because they care, because they want to impact lives, they want to save lives. And so watching Tara go through the experience of training and then sitting in front of veterans, and I would sit in the corner of the room in some of these sessions. I would go through some of the treatments like EMDR and stuff that she was doing, prolonged exposure, sit in on PTSD orientation classes where you would see like a lot of like discouraged looks in the room of folks that are there at their first orientation, and they're like, they just want to get the heck out of there, right? So that tells you like if there's enough there, you're like, this is important and this is why it's important. So that should be a character. I spent a lot of time with Vietnam veterans doing honor flight out of Austin, right? It was very fortunate to go. You take, World War II veterans, Vietnam veterans to their respective memorials in DC. And what would come out? You spend a weekend together. It's an intimate experience because you're one-on-one, you share a hotel room together. You are in charge of that veteran, that national treasure. And you have this typically emotional experience going to the wall. And then at night, you might find yourself down in the hotel lobby bar having a whiskey. And there's a camaraderie, there's a fellowship. And what comes out, all of those experiences informed Vondi Curtis Hall's character, who plays a Vietnam veteran in the film. I never invented anything. I never took the liberty as a civilian to be like, again, oh, that would be really neat if they said that. Everything was informed straight from my experiences that I was just so lucky to be informed by. So when you kind of go through that process, and then, the original script had three deployments in it, right? And it was 250 pages, I think. That's a mini series. That's not a feature film, right? And I started to distill it over the years and refine it. And I would go back to the VA, do more work. I would go back, oh, I would, fly back out to see a certain vet, and hey, when that happened, and oh, and then you would just refine, refine, and refine to get it down to 120 pages. 3 to 4 months out from going to camera, we were short on budget. And I was like, one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given was by a dear friend and colleague, Braden Aftergood. He was an executive producer on Lone Survivor, and he does all Taylor Sheridan stuff now. And he said, if you don't have the money to shoot the deployments, like a real budget, don't shoot them. He said this years ago to me. And that always stuck with me, because that you could dishonor folks if you're like, but this is all we had. Nobody's gonna care. So I had to cut the deployments. But what I didn't lose, Travis, is that that was part of the research that informed my performance. So in the scene with Virginia Madsen's character, where I'm talking about a particular military operation, rather than show it, I talk about it, and I could see it. I was in me, that story, because I had met with many of the guys in that unit that had loosely inspired what ended up on the screen. So that's kind of how the story sort of forms and sort of takes place. And you just, as the storyteller, try not to get in the way of it and just allow it to sort of, you know, take its course.
I did want to talk about Virginia Madsen's character, because a lot of times, you know, fellow veterans and even myself, I'm like, wait a minute, how is this person, woman, a lot of times, who's a counselor, going to relate to me when she's never held an M16, never went on a hump, never marched in drill, going to be able to help me through my challenges? This is not going to work. And sometimes it's an active thought, sometimes a subconscious thought. But in the trailer that I watched, because I have not watched the full movie yet, the parts you see of her, I'm like, you know, you got that part of her right. But how did you get her to get that right? And how was that interaction like?
So Virginia has been touched in her own life by similar things that her character talks about in the film.
Okay.
And I think that which I'm not at liberty to talk sure. about, because that's for Virginia, obviously, to discuss. But Virginia is a Gold Star family member. And that came through in the performance. And she was very careful in her approach to that element of being a trauma therapist, because not every trauma therapist is in that club, if you will.
Yeah.
So there was that as an underlying layer. And it was something that, as her director, her scene partner, I was very careful. It was a very delicate thing to protect and to just allow her the space to allow the character to breathe as she had seen it, you know, as, you know. So, but the time that I had spent in my research and going back to Dr. Consolino, I had seen that very often, you know, veterans being treatment adverse, right? Just, I literally have heard those lines sitting in an orientation room of like, what do you know? And, you know, I remember there was a female veteran sitting at the back of the room, and she yelled out to the front of the room, "So you're going to cure us, honey?" And I remember, like, it was like that abrupt of like, are you, there was so much loaded in that, like, are you joking? But also like, but I'm here if you got something that's going to help improve my life, kind of thing. And so I think with what I had seen is, yes, that's valid. You have not been in combat, but there are folks that have dedicated their lives to understanding what it is to be able to provide you with the resources and tools to help you, for lack of a better term, improve your life or whatever it is that you require. You might not even know, right? To help you heal, to help you, you know, whether it's adding structure, you know, reconnecting with your brothers, whatever it is, there are folks that have dedicated their lives to it that many, many have the answers that can help you. And that's you doing the work, right? Right, that's why right. It was important in the film to say, like, I can't fix you. That's on you. Yeah. Well, but to also understand in the movie, like, these folks are, like I've said, they're not broken, right? Like, my character in the film is not portrayed as some broken veteran down on his luck. This is the guy who was climbed the mountain and touched the fire, you know? And it was very important to show that in every character, but also to show our audience that it's okay to not be okay, right? And that if you can get yourself to a place or you can commit yourself to doing the work that it's worth it, you know?
So one of the characters I'm really interested in seeing in the film is the character playing your father-in-law.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I've talked to some of those Vietnam era veterans who say, you know what? None of this, you know, hand clapping or parade stuff happened when I got home. And they don't say it, but they're kind of resentful almost and kind of wish they had gotten the same thing. And I thought that was brought out really well in the movie for the different generational veteran experiences. And you had to be intentful about that, but where did that intent come from, Stephen?
So during my time doing Honor Flight, when you come home to the Austin airport, they do this beautiful procession, right? Where they say over the intercom, you know, we'd like to welcome back our Vietnam veterans, our World War II veterans. And everyone claps, holds their flags, and you do a procession through the airport. My guy I was chaperoning wasn't having it. And he was just like, nah, I'm not doing this. He's just like, you know, when I came home, you know, I had to exit out the back, you know, and my medals were sent to me in the mail. And essentially these folks, like, you know, for some of them, you know, felt like they were spat on, you know, and there wasn't that warm homecoming. And I found that on many occasions talking to Vietnam veterans of how they were treated when they came home. And I understood that. Like, I wanted this man to have this experience because it was for him. And it's a different generation. It was like young kids and everyone to feel that love. And that was valid to his own experience. And I said, sir, whatever your wishes are. He's like, my wife's circling outside to pick me up. I'm like, do you mind if I can at least walk you to the door and just thank you for this weekend together? He goes, yeah, absolutely. And we did that. And I think for him and his dignity was that it was obviously a very emotional moment to now have that, how many years later, five, six, you know, decades later. And I respected the heck out of that was his decision. But I also understood, because when, you know, the time that I had spent with them and the time that had been shared outside of the military experience of what it's like to be in a jungle fighting, you know, Viet Cong and, you know, but coming home and then what those years were like of like finding a job and like not talking about your service and trying to find out where you fit back into your community, that was universal, that I found in my research anyway. So it was really important for Vondi Curtis Hall's character to embody both those truths, but also that plight, right? Because Vondi's character in the film is present day, and he does talk about his service in the film, but also how it made him the man that he is. And I felt like that was really important because we've been very fortunate, Travis, to in the last year to screen the film across the country on the festival circuit. And we always invite veterans of all generations and conflicts, mental health workers, you know, first responders, Gold Star families. But Vietnam veterans have stood up in a sold out auditorium during a Q&A and have said passionately and emotionally, you nailed it. And I have to tell you, in this 14-year journey, when anyone ever asks, like, what's been the hardest part, what's been your biggest challenge in getting Sheepdog to the screen, my biggest challenge as the storyteller was and is always getting it right. And so it's a very humbling experience because I didn't make this film for myself. I made it for the folks that we portray on screen.
So there's an aspect where you are the storyteller, but you're also acting in the story as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know much about the film and how film works, but I understand that being a director and being an actor, it's almost two parts of yourselves in the same space at the same time. How did you balance all that and remain true to your vision?
So also being the writer, you see it in your mind's eye, right? You have a way that you hear it in your head of how the dialogue should sound and feel, right? And that informs the casting process, right? When you meet with folks. In, when you get into pre-production, you're looking at like, okay, we do a location scout. You're looking at, okay, we're shooting in the paper mill. I see the camera movements as this. You try to map that all out ahead of time. Yes, on the day when you go to shoot, stuff can change. It typically always does. But you try to iron out those things pretty early in it so that when you get to set, you know exactly what you're doing and everybody's ready, everybody knows in every department what they're doing. As the director, actor, my process was typically, you know, I would go through the motions of making sure my crew know exactly what, where the camera was moving, how it needed to, you know, what we needed to do, or if there was no movement, I would hear in my head a score to the movie that was not even written yet. To know how long can you hold on that look or on the scene to inform, am I going to put a cello in there? Am I going to have violins? Is it just going to be ambient noise? Like, so there's all those things that are kind of working. But at the end of the day, when you get to action, my process was usually the last words I spoke were to my cinematographer, Evans Brown, who's incredible. He was like my Gandalf on this, a soft-spoken man that had been in the business a very long time, who understood both how to light for what we were telling, which was a very real lived-in story, and then also how the camera movements would elevate the story and inform the story and support it. And then I would turn and I would go right into it. And I always had to like trust the words on the page. But to be fair, Travis, like we made this on a shoestring budget. So when you don't have money to throw at any problem, you're forced to trust your instinct because you have to act on it. Right. So there was never a scenario as the actor, director, if you will. I'm over in a corner going, what would Calvin do in this situation? Oh, I should, you know. I literally just said the words that were on the page. And, you know, I've said this before and I really mean it when I say it. Like, this was lightning in a bottle. Like, I would never be able to recreate this if I lost all the footage and you said, you know, I know you only made it for $1 million, but here's $10 million to go reshoot it. I wouldn't take your money. It's like leading up to the moment and the struggle of the journey at that point was 12 years. The cast that were involved, all the things that were even happening, all of us in our personal lives and how that ended up on the screen and the Gold Star family members that came out to support us on set. We hired 17 military veterans. Like it was this, for lack of a better term, this magical thing that happened that I will carry with me for the rest of my life until I'm old and gray, that I can't explain, but it's on the screen and we captured it over those, you know, 20 days in Western Massachusetts in a small mill town. And and that, you know, there are scenes in the movie as an actor. I can tell you there's a really pivotal scene with Vondi Curtis Hall's character where I'm sitting across from a table with him. It's a very emotional scene. And as Vondi and I both tell it, we almost have no memory of it. Because what happened was, and this happens sometimes, you know, in acting, where you're so present in what is actually happening that the body and mind like doesn't know it's make-believe. So everything around you know, the boom op that's holding the mic above you can hear him breathing usually, right? You're right there. You got to pretend he's not there. You have your script supervisor behind the camera. You can, you know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of bodies in a room, right? And something just happens where you get like tunnel vision and it all goes away and you're just there in the scene. And so that happened on multiple occasions throughout the film. So I wasn't able to ever overthink anything, which serviced the story.
The story happens, and one of the things through the story and this conversation, and what I hope people see is this aspect of post-traumatic growth. And I thought about it as I'm reading about your journey, your story, the other things about Sheepdog, and I'm like, huh. That is something I think we need to really lean into because a lot of veterans, to your point, don't like to be thought of as broken. We're just in this state sometimes trying to figure out a way to get out of it. But there's not enough emphasis on what comes after PTSD or growing after PTSD. And I thought that was really interesting that you really have a focus on that in this story and things around Sheepdog. Tell me more about how that came to be.
Well, you know, in my research, you know, the folks that I first met, you know, in 2011, many of those folks I became close with. And I didn't just get to see their journey in this one moment of their lives where they had just gotten out. Their last deployment was the year before. Now they've transitioned out, they're civilian, and that's it. I got to witness and be a part of their journey years later. So I got to see where their lives ended up and what, you know, what became of them, and having families and different jobs and struggles and triumphs. And I often saw, you know, again, in my own research, that like those that, and again, not everybody's that I met with had been deployed, and certainly not everybody's been in combat. But I did see a through line that folks that had committed to, that had trauma, that committed to doing the work, had managed to somehow through that journey, you know, harness, if you will, that trauma and live on the other side of it. Meaning like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I saw that. I saw the human embodiment of that so many times, and it was so inspiring. And I thought, like, that's important to tell. And why is there not more stories telling that? Why is it always, you know, these depictions of veterans as broken or drug addicts or down on their luck and, you know, all this kind of stuff, where like, I'm telling you right now, I met with hundreds of people. I saw that maybe less than a handful of times, not enough to make a movie about that. Not enough to say that I think is representative of this group by any means. What I saw, you know, I saw veterans, you know, that went on to be, you know, took their military skills and went on to be entrepreneurs, started businesses, started VSOs, you know, continued their service to country and to community through nonprofit work and, you know, and what they had gone through. And it's not to say that there aren't challenging days in between that, but through support of their community, resources that they were willing to accept, whether it's counseling, fitness, diet, banding back together with your brothers and a sense of community, going on, I'm just giving an example, wind therapy and motorcycle rides, to just taking the time on a Sunday afternoon to have, you know, a group of vets over for a barbecue, just to remain connected. And I saw the power of that. And I thought that was really important to tell in our story. So, you know, when we talk about post-traumatic growth, because Sheepdog is not a post-traumatic stress movie, it's a post-traumatic growth movie. We do go there and we deal with some of the hard stuff in the beginning of the film. But the journey that I felt was worth taking was to show our audience, you know, it doesn't have to be a perfect happy ending, but it can be, it's a redemption story. You know, it's a story of healing. It's a story of answering that knock at the door. You know, when we talk about Sheepdog, the metaphor from David Grossman's quote, we're not talking necessarily about the literal sense, because that was Calvin's military service, right? Which was protecting the flock and confronting the wolf. Coming home, that wolf is what he's dealing with inside. And I saw that so many times through the men and women that I sat in front of, that opened up to me, and then I remained friends with, continued to spend time with, and it was just so inspiring. And so that's why I think that message of post-traumatic growth is really important to make sure that audiences see that for the first time.
When audiences see this, you're going to have non-veterans and veterans looking at it. As we wind this down, what do you want the non-veteran to see, and what do you want the veteran to see?
Sure. That's a great question. So I think for the non-veteran, for civilians, I think it's just to have a better understanding that of what our veterans go through in a very organic and authentic way to show them, as I again had seen it in my research. But I think the call to action is more or less of being supportive in your communities to veterans' needs, whether that's volunteering, at a VSO, whether that's, rather than saying thank you for your service, saying tell me a little bit about your service or how are you doing, something as simple as that. And I understand, and I've talked about this before, and I don't want to be preachy about it, I understand that civilians don't know how, for the most part, to greet a veteran, and saying thank you for your service sometimes takes a lot of courage even to say that, because they just don't know. But I just know on the veteran side, it often feels like, and it can feel like, a hollow gesture. And I know that most veterans, again, only in my experience, have said, I'd just rather you ask me how I'm doing, or if you want, ask me about my military service,
So I got something for you. What I've been
Okay.
telling other veterans, and I found this works for
Okay.
me.
Okay.
Tell me, thank me for my service right now. Go
Oh
ahead, do it.
man.
Go ahead, do it. No,
Okay.
go ahead.
This is
No,
gonna
what?
be the worst acting you've ever seen,
That's
because I
fine. It's
don't ever
fine.
say
Fine.
it.
I'm not
Okay,
an actor.
Travis, thank you for your service.
Hey, you know what, Stephen? Thank you for being a great American. I appreciate it. And so for a couple of veterans tried it, and they're like, you know what, dude? That wasn't that bad. It kind of closes the loop it, because I'm like, because it freaked me out the first couple of times. I'm like, thank you for my service. I'm really like, whoa, I was in World War II. But when I started saying, hey, because for the Americans that weren't honored when they came back from Vietnam, it was awkward. For me, it was kind of awkward, but it kind of closes that loop. I acknowledge, hey, you know what? That person take the time to appreciate what I did. And I can acknowledge the fact that they did that in a really kind of like closed loop way. And we both leave feeling pretty good. Think about it.
Yeah, I love that. I will keep that with me, because that's and share that with folks, because that's beautiful. I think that, and I have to say, on the civilian side, and then I'll respond to what I would hope
Sure.
veterans get out of it, but I also just want to share that I cannot tell you, I've traveled the nooks and crannies of this country. I've gone into many different living rooms of all different backgrounds, political beliefs, whatever it is. And I have to tell you, uniformly, if you shut off the news, our country is much more unified, especially behind veterans. That's what I'm speaking about. Behind veterans, and you would than the news media would ever have you believe. I'm telling you, folks, that people, for the most part, just don't understand. And what you don't know, you don't know. But the folks that do, civilians that have been opened up to that, they're all in. They just don't know what to do. They don't know, how can we help you? How can we honor you? How can we honor your commitment to service and sacrifice? Just tell me, And that's a big part, and that's our job in the civilian community to bridge that gap. What I would hope veterans get out of Sheepdog, of all generations and conflicts, I hope you feel seen and heard. I hope you know that in the story, that this is honoring your, as I've said, your commitment to service and sacrifice, but also that you feel that you've had an authentic experience in feeling seen in a film that deals with, there isn't a film out there that picks up with a character, especially OIF or OEF, 10 years after their last deployment. That's where our story picks up. To know where are you at now, not the guy who's just getting, transitioned out. So that's a unique part. But what I hope you get from it is that if you are somebody who is suffering in silence, to know that you're not alone, and you don't have to endure that alone, that just picking up the phone and reaching out to one of your brothers you served with, they might be thinking the same thing. They wanting to hear from you, and just that first initial contact could literally change your life. If you're someone that's considered whether it's therapy, depending on what your military experience was or your life experience, if it's you have childhood trauma, whatever it is, that there are resources there and there are folks, I promise you, that are coming into work every day that are there. They want to make a difference. They're there to help you. And they care, most importantly. They genuinely care about it. The last thing is, you know, Sheepdog, I think it's a very authentic ending to the film because it's an ending that's a new beginning. Yeah. And committing to doing the work and going on that journey. And again, this is just from my own experience, is worth doing, is worth committing to. Because I've seen in my own experience that men and women that have gone on that journey have improved their lives, have improved their relationships with their families, with their loved ones, with their friends, have found even in some cases a higher calling. And I think that that's worth doing. And I know for some folks, it takes a lot of courage to do that. And so I don't want to be preachy or be pandering in any way. I'm just telling you from my own experience that it's worth it. And most importantly, that, as I've said, it's okay to not be okay.
It's okay.
But just to know that you matter.
Yep.
You know.
When does the movie come out? Where can we see it? And how can we support what you're doing with Sheepdog and getting the word out there, Stephen?
Sure. So we're in select theaters in December, and then we go nationwide in January. You know how streaming windows work. So I think it's like, you know, it's like in late February, I think, is when it will stream. So we'd love to see you in a theater. I know for some folks, it might be something they would want to watch in the privacy of their own home. For other folks, we really have seen groups of veterans come out together, even with their families, and have this communal experience that, you know, on a big screen with the sound. I mean, the sound design in the film is beautiful. Just to have this experience together and then be able to go out to dinner or have a cup of coffee afterwards to like talk about it, you know, has been really helpful as we've learned. So select theaters in December, nationwide in January.
I'll tell you what, Stephen, I'm going to get with some of my peeps here in the Boston area and we're going to do like a theater watch party and then
I'll come, you know, see you.
And after we'll get, yeah, it. We'll do it right. We'll do it right. But I just, again, you know, like I start off with, what I'm seeing more and more is the desire for that civilian to say, how can I help? How can I honor? How can I make sure you're taken care of? And, you know, I think the theme of post-traumatic growth with Sheepdog is really going to be resonating with my fellow veterans and me. So we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to it.
Well, I appreciate that, Travis. I also want to say, too, that we have partnered with VetTix and FirstTix. So if you're a veteran, first responder, if you haven't already signed up at VetTix, it's a 501c3 that you can get free tickets to, you know, music concerts, to sporting events. We're the first film that they've ever partnered with. And you'll be able to sign up to get tickets to see Sheepdog with your families in theaters when it comes out. Also, if you visit sheepdogthemovie.com, all of our information's there. All of our VSO partners, corporate partners, are also listed there. And drop us a line on social media. It's Sheepdog the Film, Sheepdog the Movie. And we're very interactive, and we'd love to hear from you. And when you see it in theaters, we'd love to hear your experience.
Well, I will have all those links in the Oscar Mike Radio show posts. Stephen, I want to thank you for taking time out of your very busy day. You are Oscar Mike, Charlie Mike, you are Mike everything. And I know that you know, have a lot of things going on, but I so do the time you spent with me. Thank you so much.
Travis, it's been an honor. Thank you.
I'm Travis Oscar Mike Brady with my guest, Stephen Graham, the writer, director, producer of Sheepdog the Movie. It's coming out. We hope to see you in the theaters. Let's support it and make it a big thing. Thank you very much.
Every generation, every sacrifice, our nation's service members have stood up for our freedom, our families, and our future. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. This year, you can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath. It's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Co-Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.